The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Aniko Gal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the September and October issues of Glamour magazine. And do you know what day tomorrow is? Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. Welcome back, everyone. Yay! Today is October 19th. And again, I'm going to start off again because, as you remember from last week, we have so many intriguing people who were born in October. And just a couple, not more than a couple, just a few. Let's start with October 13th, 1754, is the birthday of Mary Ludwig Hayes Macaulay. She is better known as Molly Pitcher. She was the heroine of the War for American Independence. Born near Philadelphia, she met her husband, John Hayes, near there. She then traveled with him to Valley Forge, where both endured the harsh conditions forced upon the Continental Army. On June 28, 1778, at the Battle of Monmouth, she was given the name Molly Pitcher by Washington's soldiers because of her ceaseless work providing water to the exhausted troops. In this same fight, she manned her husband's cannon after he was wounded and continued firing the weapon until the battle was over. That's Mary Ludwig Hayes Macaulay, better known as Molly Pitcher, born October 13, 1754. October 14, 1644 was the birth date of William Penn. One might wonder why the son of a famous English admiral would endure prison, ostracism, and poverty for his religious beliefs. William Penn, founder of the Pennsylvania colony, pursued this course when he became a Quaker in his native Britain. In 1682, when Penn's father died, King Charles II gave young Penn title to an enormous area of land in the American colonies to wipe out a royal debt to the elder Penn. Penn named the area Sylvania, meaning woods, because of its immense forests. Pennsylvania, as it came to be known, became a refuge for thousands of Europeans seeking religious freedom. Even Native Americans were treated fairly in this Quaker-dominated state. October 14, anyone making a sandwich for tomorrow's lunch? October 14, 1744, the Earl of Sandwich in England took two slices of bread and placed meat between them, thus creating the world's first sandwich. Okay. October 14 also, 1890, birth date of Dwight David Eisenhower, our 34th president. He was born in Denison, Texas. His occupation was soldier. He was president from 1953 to 1961. He was Republican. He died March 28, 1969 in Washington, D.C., and he is buried in Abilene, Kansas. About Eisenhower, he came from a poor family. He went to West Point. His West Point education led to an army career. Supreme commander of Allied forces in Europe during World War II. And he became president of Columbia University. During his term as the United States president, he ended the Korean War. He started the space program when Russians launched first, Sputnik 1, and historic Supreme Court decision made against segregation in public schools, May 17, 1954. All right, and we've got just a couple more. On October 16, 1758, the birth date of Noah Webster. Any word lovers out there? In 1828, Noah Webster, a farm boy who became a teacher, published his American Dictionary of the English Language, a job that had taken him 50, that's 50, years to complete. New editions of Webster's Dictionary are still issued periodically. On October 19, which is today, right? October 19, 1850. On this date, Annie Smith Peck, a mountain climber, became the first person to conquer Peru's Mount Coropona at 21,250 feet. She was 61 years old. And finally, on October 19 as well, 1987, so what is that, 30 years ago, the New York Stock Exchange crashed on this date, sending markets all over the world into a sharp decline. The panic following the crash saw many investors lose faith in the market as a sound investment. The Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged 508 points between the opening bell at the stock exchange at 9:30 a.m. and the closing at 4 p.m. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is the oldest index of stock market activity in United States history. The New York State Department of Labor estimated the loss of 10,800 jobs in the securities and commodities industry as a result of the crash, and certainly many more jobs were lost in related fields. So taking that as our little cue here, our first article from Glamour magazine is Meet the New Money Experts. They're female, under 40, and on a mission to grow your wealth, by Lauren Brown West Rosenthal. Picture a stereotypical, quote, financial guru. Are you seeing an old guy in a suit? That tired image might be why only 47% of women say they would be comfortable talking about finances with an advisor, according to a recent Fidelity study. Time to erase that stereotype. A growing group of social network savvy women are doling out money advice to their followers and unflinchingly sharing their own highs and lows. Social media has opened up ways for women to talk about money without judgment, says Tiffany Alishe, 37, a financial educator and author. Sharing combats shame's most powerful ally, secrecy. Here's what the new money masters want you to know. All right. Don't let old money habits define you. Melody Wright, 34, founder of Broke on Purpose, where she writes about how she's paying off more than $212,000 in debt. Her story? I used to be a shopaholic, and my husband and I accumulated about $7,600 in credit card debt. Then when I graduated from my PhD program, I realized we were going to owe more than $212,000 in debt from car loans, student loans, and those cards. All our money was basically going toward our debt, and we knew if something happened with one of our jobs, we would be in trouble. This scared me. I wanted us to be in control of our finances rather than have our financial circumstances control us. Her solution. We got into a cycle of work, pay off debt, repeat. That meant making major changes. Skipping vacations, cooking at home. I sold a lot of my shoes and handbags online and downsized our cable plan, though we still go on the occasional date night. We've paid off more than $82,000 in 2 years. I shared our debt payoff journey on my lifestyle blog, and people started asking me for advice. It got so much interest, I started my site, Broke on Purpose. Next year's goal? Get our debt under $100,000. Her advice? Come up with a sustainable plan for tackling a deficit. You can do a, quote, debt snowball, paying off the lowest amount you owe first, regardless of interest rates. This method allows you to see the rewards of your hard work early on. There's also the debt avalanche, whereby you tackle debts with a higher interest rate first, regardless of the amount. But the fastest plan is to throw as much money as you can toward debt. You can pick up a part-time job or a side hustle to bring in extra income. Keep in mind that you won't have to do this forever. Think of it as a means to an end. All right, be conscious of where your money is going. Ashley Feinstein Gerstle, 30, founder of The Fiscal Femme, or FUM, F-E-M-M-E, a financial wellness platform. Her story. I was a finance major at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania and then an investment banker. Yet I knew absolutely nothing about my own money. It was only when I took a job that paid me a bit less and I was bleeding through my savings that I started caring more about my financial well-being. I realized that I was spending more than $1,500 a year on takeout and coffee at work. Even my froyo habit was getting costly. I wasn't aware of the little things that added up. Her solution. I first tracked where my money was going in a money journal. I looked at the annual cost of each of my expenses to see the true impact. I got curious about joy and spending. What expenses could I let go of without really missing them? And which expenses were worth it? I started reading personal finance books. It was life-changing and inspired me to start writing to share what I had discovered. I tell my followers now, when you're conscious of where your money is going and get clear on what's important to you, your choices around money become easier. Her advice? Keep a money journal to write down what you spend and earn. It reconnects you to your spending. You should also look at your expenses on an annual basis. Spending $10 on lunch might not feel like much, but if you're doing that every day of the week, that's $3,650 a year. Use the great data you've gathered to see the true impact of each expense. Excuse me, that's $3,650 per year. So use the great data you've gathered to see the true impact of each expense. And finally, separate and automate your savings. You can set up an automatic transfer to a savings account so that you prioritize putting money away first. This makes savings an expense and guarantees it will happen. All right, and now just a few of her quick tips. One, money trait to look for in a partner. Responsibility and the willingness to communicate about money. Two, best money saving motivation. Remember, debt is robbing from your future to fill your present. Three, best place to hold short-term savings. An online savings account. Find a free one where you earn around 1% interest. And finally, how much should you save in an emergency fund? Think through a couple of emergency situations, not fun, I know, to see how many months of savings would make you feel comfortable. Okay, our next article is entitled, Why You Should Never Date Anyone You Meet IRL. People say finding someone in real life is better or, quote, more romantic. Dana Schwartz isn't buying it. The summer after graduating college, I committed one of the worst hookup mistakes a woman can make. I made out with a guy who wore a fedora. In my defense, he wasn't wearing one at the time. My error wouldn't become apparent until we friended each other while hanging out later that day. "You're wearing a fedora in your profile," I said, unable to take my eyes away from a faux artsy black-and-white pic, which would have been mildly embarrassing for a 14-year-old on MySpace, but was humiliating for a 23-year-old on Facebook. "Actually," he replied, "it's a trilby." The trouble, I realized, was that before going to second base, we'd only met in person. I'd missed his real, all-wrong-for-me personality, the one that shared unfunny Facebook memes and felt strongly about hats. That's spit I can never unswap. If we'd met on the internet, my fedora shame could have been avoided. Dating apps are ubiquitous now, yet a stigma still exists for couples when it comes to the confession, quote, "we met online." Even simply looking for a hookup on the internet has a faint air of desperation. There's an eyebrow raised and a whisper of, "What? Could you not find anyone in real life to date you?" People crave romantic, quote, "how we met" stories about fate and timing. "I was trying to check out a library book the very minute he was returning it." Those tell a story of the universe pushing soulmates together. Meeting online implies you had to kick the universe in the butt. But now that our lives are more attached to the internet than ever, it's astonishing to me that anyone would want to date without first finding out how their partner exists online. Your online identity may be curated, but so is the identity you put out flirting at a bar. And, I would argue, the online version reveals more about your true personality than anyone could get in an interaction, especially in semi-darkness and semi-intoxication. Think about the girl you know whose Instagram is green smoothies or perfectly chosen outfits of the day. It may not be what her life actually looks like, but it reflects what she wants it to be. A friend of mine recently mentioned she had been on a date. She met him, she explained, at a bar. "At a bar?" I replied. "But he could be anyone. He could tweet terrible jokes. His Facebook profile might be all meme pictures." The reality for my liberal friend was worse. His online comments revealed he was an unrepentant Trump supporter. And here's how I know I'm right about all this. Last year, in a bout of loneliness, I tweeted out a Google form titled, "Hey, do you want to date Dana Schwartz?" with questions designed to find my next boyfriend. "How do you feel about dogs? Is it weird I'm attracted to Kylo Ren?" I saved the most important for last. "What's your Twitter handle?" After 208 guys filled in my form, I filtered out people based on social media red flags. Retweeting neo-Nazi eggs, blurry selfies, too many hashtags. Based on my social stalking, I chose two guys to meet. The first was fine enough, but I immediately fell for the second, and we've been dating since. Everything I'd gleaned from his Twitter, was true in real life. His bio read, "Author of Bleak House by Charles Dickens," and in person he was just as funny and literary. And because he followed me on Twitter too, he was already cool with my bad puns and attraction to Kylo. To be fair, fate may have also played a role. It turns out we actually had crossed paths months earlier. He'd seen me at a book fair, but was too shy to say anything. But ultimately, only the internet allowed us to get together for real. Okay, and in case you want a little more literature in your life, We have an article, one from the September and then the next one from the October Glamour magazine. And the one from the September ones reads like this. Read these and weep. Didn't get away this summer? Let three blisteringly talented female authors take you on a nationwide road trip. First stop, Ohio. Celeste Ng's latest, Little Fires Everywhere, is a drama about suburban teenagers and the adults who do their best to raise them. Like my husband, Ng is a native of Shaker Heights. Go Red Raiders! And her descriptions are so dead on, you can practically see the Cleveland skyline as you ride shotgun with these characters. Next up, Mississippi. Join Jesmyn Ward and an unforgettable 13-year-old boy named Jojo on a dysfunctional family odyssey to the state penitentiary in Sing, Unburied Sing. Final destination, small town Massachusetts, where Claire Massud explores the friendship between two preschool friends who grow up together and then grow heartbreakingly apart in The Burning Girl. The end is a showdown, but the view along the way, as with all these books, is spectacular. All right, and then from the October literature section of Glamour, this is called You're Gonna Wanna Read These. Fall is like Oscar season for books. Editor Elizabeth Egan picks the big winners. I hate Halloween. Too many clowns, and I prefer my Hershey bars king size, thank you very much. But I do love my neighbor's twist on the dentist who hands out toothbrushes or trick or treaters. She's a publishing executive who gives out kids' books by the hundreds every year. If I could do the same with adult books, here are the ones I'd hand out this season. The best drop-everything debut, My Absolute Darling, by Gabriel Tallent. If you loved To Kill a Mockingbird's Scout Finch, you'll be into Turtle Alveston, a 14-year-old who lives with her unstable dad on the California coast and is a survivor in every sense, living on berries, hiking barefoot for days. Everything changes when she meets a pair of boys, sees how they live, and begins to build the life she deserves. Another one, The Naughty 90s. And this is the best make you smarter nonfiction. The Naughty 90s by David Friend. The 1990s are having a moment. See Baywatch, Twin Peaks, OJ back in the news. Writer David Friend argues that we are who we are now, culturally, politically, sexually, because of what happened then. It's a hefty book, but you'll enjoy the ride in the time machine. All right, the best celeb tell-all, We're Going to Need More Wine, by Gabriel Union. She had met me at Wine, but the Being Mary Jane star delivers more than just laughs in this moving essay collection. The one that floored me, the story of her rape in Payless Shoe Store. She grabbed his gun, shot, and missed. And that isn't even the most jaw-dropping part. Read an exclusive excerpt at glamour.com. The best memoir, The Book of Separation, by Tova Mervis. We've all daydreamed about walking away from it all. Mervis actually did, after years of soldiering through a good enough life. This is the moving story of her life, post-divorce and post-Orthodox Judaism. She's an inspiring example of living and loving on your own terms. And the best historical novel, Manhattan Beach, by Jennifer Egan. Through impeccable research, Egan, no relation to the author of this article, brings gangster-era New York City to life as you follow the Kerrigan family from the Great Depression to World War II. The twist involving the family patriarch is wrenching. Don't miss this novel. All right, so just to go back over these one more time, from the September 1, we have Sing, Unburied Sing, and The Burning Girl. And then from the October 1, she has My Absolute Darling, The Naughty 90s, We're Going to Need More Wine, The Book of Separation, and Manhattan Beach. Yeah. All righty. So there it is. All right. And just finally, a really quick clip here. Dear Diana, this is about Princess Diana. Dear Diana, you still rule. Love, everyone. 20 years after her death on August 31st, 1997, at age 36, Princess Diana's legacy endures in the humanitarian work she did. Sons William and Harry, and her singular, slightly subversive style, which feels as fresh now as it did then. And here's just a little clip from Demi Moore. When I think of her, I think of somebody who was deeply compassionate. Whatever may have been going on in her life, and we all have things going on, she always carried herself with such grace and ease. Her style reflected that in such an authentic way. And there are pictures of her with a sailor cap on and a blue and white striped jacket, in a black evening gown with no straps, actually just a little straps on her arms, I guess, in a red jacket and skirt, it's a suit, with gold pins and buttons as on her lapel, with a pink jacket, really beautifully styled, just very simple, and a red hat with a pink sash on it. And on that one, it says, brim and proper, Diana tops a coat dress with a hat, by milliner Philip Somerville. All righty. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Annika Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long, until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.